to be American.
This is Democracy Optimist. Here's your host, Professor Joshua Douglas of the University of Kentucky Rosenberg College of Law.
This spring, something unique is happening in Lexington, Kentucky. 36 individuals are gathering for public meetings and debate on a topic that might seem arcane, but impacts all of us: potential revisions to the city charter. This is the ultimate exercise in how the sausage gets made. But this time, it's being made by a representative cross-section of the community. It's a one-of-a-kind exercise in hyper-local democracy, and it's being watched all over the country as a potential model for how to truly involve people in government. Here to discuss this upcoming civic assembly in Lexington, Kentucky, is Richard Young. Richard is the founder and executive director of Civic Lex, a nonprofit dedicated to strengthening civic health that is running the assembly. Now we will dive into the details of the civic assembly. Full disclosure, I'm on the board of Civic Lex and also serve on the advisory board for this civic assembly. Richard, welcome back to Democracy Optimist.
Thanks so much for having me, Josh.
So first, let's tell us the origins of this civic assembly. How did this whole idea come about?
Sure. So the civic assembly has been in a planning stage for actually the past 3 years. We got it kicked off with a conversation with the Urban County Council, where a couple members approached us about potentially running a process to look at the city charter and evaluate if anything needs to change. And we were interested, but we wanted to try out a new process that really removed us as an organization from making those sorts of qualitative decisions and really put it in the hands of the public. And so we'd been familiar with civic assemblies or citizens assemblies, as they're sometimes called, for a while. They've been used over 700 times worldwide to make very important decisions. And we thought it could be a really interesting model for focusing on the city charter because it really allows participants to go deep into an issue. You know, I'm sure we'll get into the structure of the assembly in a minute, but it is an intensive amount of time. You know, the participants are going to be committing about 30 hours, 35 hours to this process. And that amount of time really allows them to dig deep into an issue that might be a little bit confusing on its face, you know, or not confusing, but just, you know, it's not a common issue that people are talking about, although it has pretty significant repercussions for the community. And so this, unlike any other public engagement process where, you know, you're trying to reach a lot of people with, you know, a small amount of information and trying to get people's feedback on things that they recognize in their daily life, this is something that is quite niche, quite potent, has a lot of ramifications, and because of that requires a bit of a deeper dive from the public.
So let's talk a little bit more about that public engagement part of this. You know, you said you wanted to remove Civic Lex as the driving organization, instead really rely on the people, the residents of the city, to do this work. So tell us how that has impacted the approach of everything that you've planned.
When we were first settling into this idea of doing a civic assembly on the city charter, we needed to understand which of the topics in the charter we wanted to focus on, because any change to the city charter has to go up for a public ballot referendum. We wanted to make sure, you know, we had a cap of how many we could do. And so we wanted to make sure that we were focusing on a number of topics in the assembly that would be doable and achievable and potentially changeable. And so we did a large-scale public engagement process where we attended, you know, dozens of community events. We had a survey out that, you know, around 850 Lexington residents responded to that were, you know, the goal of that survey and that whole process was to try and distill down, you know, what are the topics that people would be the most interested in this assembly focusing on? And so from the 8 or 10 topics, we ended up coming down to two. We took the topic that had the most sort of unanimity around, where the public most agreed with each other, and that was on how frequently the charter should be reviewed. About 74% of residents that responded to our survey said that the charter should be reviewed regularly. And we also looked at the one that was the most divided, the one where the public had the closest split between votes. And in that survey, we found that that topic was the compensation of our council members, which has a lot of ramifications. You know, how much our council members are compensated impacts who can serve on council, which therefore impacts trust, participation, representation, all of the things that we're trying to focus on with our assembly. And so that topic, 43% of the public thought that council compensation should be increased, and 42% thought it should stay the same. And so we have these two topics that were, you know, where we have this really pretty robust set of public perspectives on. And we decided to go with the one that the people were the most divided on and the one that the people were the most, you know, cohesive on.
And of course, the compensation piece, you know, has been in the news given the number of current city council members who have announced they're not running for re-election and have cited compensation, you know, for what is paid as a part-time job, but, you know, they felt like has been full-time responsibilities. So we keep talking about, you know, the civic assembly, but let's just get into the details. So there's 36 people who are meeting throughout the month to discuss these two issues of the city charter, which, again, I think we can think of the city charter sort of like the city's constitution. So
exactly,
these 36 individuals are meeting to discuss two potential changes to the city's governing document. How do we get to this? These 36 people? Why are these the people that are going to get to decide this thing?
So when you're trying to build an assembly, you know, you want to have a large enough body of people where you can have a real diversity of opinion and diversity of thought. But you don't want too large of a body because it becomes unwieldy unless you're doing one nationwide like has happened in Ireland and many other countries. So we settled on 36 because Lexington has 12 council districts and we wanted to make it a sort of multiple of 12. And how we selected those 36 residents is one of the most distinguishing factors about a civic assembly versus any other type of public engagement. So typically in any public engagement process, right, it's who shows up to the process. You can take a lot of steps to try and reach new people and you know, hold meetings in different places and try and get as much information from a broad set of people as you can. But the way the assembly works is actually quite different. Instead of counting on who shows up, we try and select this group of 36 people using a very complicated process that's called sortition. Mm-hmm. So what we did is we sent out 10,000 mailers to 10,000 randomly selected residential addresses in Lexington.
I'm still mad I didn't get one.
I'm so sorry. I've heard that from many people. So, apartments, homes, anywhere that was a residential address in Lexington, we got that data from the Fayette County PVA's office. So shout out to them for their help. And we sent these 10,000 postcards, and on the postcards was basically it's like a Willy Wonka golden ticket, right? Like, you have been selected to participate in this process. This is how you apply if you want to do it. And there's, you know, a QR code and a website and a phone number if you need to do that. And so we ended up having about 380, 400 people actually end up applying. And, you know, the typical response rate for these internationally is about 2-3%. So we felt pretty good about that. And then from that group of, you know, 380 or so people, we got their demographic information. We took that demographic information and we put it into this software called Panelot. Like Camelot, but Panelot, mm-hmm. To produce what's called a panel. And the panel is the people that serve on the assembly. And so what we do is we took all of the demographic information of Lexington across 9 demographic categories. So age, race, income, homeownership status, political party, a variety of them, and their affiliation with Civic Lex. We wanted to make sure that there weren't, you know, there's weren't that many people that already knew about Civic Lex. And we took that data, we put it into Panelot, and then we took all of our applicant data anonymized and put it in there. And basically what Panelot does is it makes as many combinations as possible that would be statistically representative of your community. So if your community is 50% men, 50% women, it will generate a panel that's 50% men, 50% women. If you have a lot of demographics in there, in our case 9, it will produce as many panels as possible where the population of that panel, the 36 people in our case, as closely as possible match the demographics of Lexington across all 9 of those categories. And so we ended up getting 204 panels. Mm-hmm. And then from that, we wrote every number on a little ball and put it in a bingo cage. And we spun a bingo cage and we picked one out at random. And it was panel number 24. And so what that means is that the people that are serving on the Civic Assembly were chosen by lottery. They were chosen randomly, right? It was random mailings to random addresses, random applications from those random addresses, a set of random panels from the random applicants, and then drawing randomly one of the random panels of the random number of panels. So there's a lot of different ways to get it so that we weren't, that we weren't hand selecting people, right? These are all people that were chosen by like a quadruple lottery.
So a lot of randomness in the system and yet still demographically consistent with Lexington's population. So just give us a couple of these, like the youngest person on the assembly.
Yeah. So we have folks all the way up in their 80s. We have someone that is under 18. We are, almost exactly matched across all of our demographics. We feel really good about it. We have, so many Republicans, so many Democrats, so many independents, so many people that aren't registered. We have, so many folks of all of the sort of, races in Lexington plus multiracial. We have, our split is almost exactly a third, third, third for the way that the census categorizes income. So, the sort of full income range broken down into thirds. I mean, it's pretty amazing. We were like all really nervous because we did the drawing live on Facebook Live. We streamed it because we wanted to make sure that people saw like, this is really random.
Ultimate transparency.
Ultimate transparency. And so, we drew the ball and we read off the names live. And, it was a little nerve-wracking because we're like, okay, we know we've followed all the best practices. We know we've done all of our due diligence. But when those names were being read off, And so if the panel didn't, if something had gone wrong somewhere along the line, that would have been fully out there for people to see. And so it was a little stressful for us. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, the panel that we ended up with is really great. And so we have these 36 people. We've had a few that have not been able to do it. And we have a statistical approach for selecting the most similar person along all nine demographics from the rest of our pool. And they'll all start meeting here at the beginning of March.
All right, so a little radio magic here. We're chatting before the assembly has actually begun, but this will air and it's already underway when people are listening. So do you have predictions as kind of what will have happened at the beginning of the assembly?
I honestly don't know what to expect. I think it is going to be, it's going to be a really fascinating experiment in what it looks like to take folks that have maybe never participated in a civic process before. Certainly folks that don't know what the charter is. I don't know if anyone really knows what the charter is except for like eight people. and really give them a pretty significant amount of authority and decision-making power over a really important but very dense document. We've been on the phone a lot with our panelists and emailing, and I think their excitement is pretty infectious. Mm-hmm. Like they really seem very excited to participate in this process and to be asked to do it. I think again, so much of public engagement in local democracy work is who shows up, and this is such a different approach because it is about inviting people to show up, and inviting very specific people. And the other thing, we haven't quite talked about this, but another important distinction about this process is that all of the participants will be compensated. Mm-hmm. So we are compensating each person $1,200 for their time. And then we also have childcare and transportation stipends available. And to some, we'll end up providing transportation ourselves if the stipend won't work. This is really about trying to take as many barriers as possible out of the way for people to really genuinely participate in a process that really wants their involvement. Mm-hmm. It is designed for them to be in control and for them to make the ultimate decision about what happens.
So we're all so polarized these days. At least our political discourse, especially at the national level, is so polarized. And that sometimes trickles down to the state level and even the local level. So, might these 36 people just spend the entire time squabbling with each other?
Well, we certainly hope not. We have a facilitator who's an incredibly gifted facilitator here in our community, who's going to be, making sure it'll be her job to make sure that that doesn't happen. Mm-hmm. But I think when it comes to issues like the city charter, which is, again, it sounds boring, but it does have really massive implications for our community, depending on what part of it you are looking at. Local issues tend to be a little less tense for people than national issues. I mean, that's something that we experience a lot in our work. We have people from all sorts of different political perspectives come to our events. You know, the assembly by its definition will have, will be, you know, proportionally representative to the political persuasions of Lexington, which is a pretty, you know, is a politically contested space. It's not, you know, 90% one party. And so I think what our observations have been, and I expect that this will be the same thing will be true with the assembly, when people are given an opportunity to really shape their own community, and when it's not, you know, one of the big hot button issues, people from different perspectives, vastly different perspectives, can find common ground and can find an opportunity to connect and work together. It was so interesting, as we were selecting our topics, we were going through and looking at the survey data that we got back. And even, you know, along part of what we asked people was their political, you know, their political registration, because we wanted to see, and their sort of self-identified ideology separate from the registration, because we wanted to see, you know, did these topics resonate differently with folks that are registered for different parties or see themselves as, you know, very progressive or very conservative? And what we found is that they didn't really fall into neat camps, right? On any one issue, you couldn't really predict what someone's perspective on that issue is going to be based on their political registration or their political ideology. Because I think just at the local level, not all issues, but many issues just don't fall neatly into those camps. And I think it reflects that people have a lot more nuance in their political thinking than we tend to give them credit for.
So once the assembly is over and these 36 individuals have made recommendations about changing the city charter, assuming they do recommend some changes, it then goes to city council for the city council to decide whether to put it on the ballot for this November. So ultimately, voters of Lexington will have the final say?
Yes. So council has adopted a resolution committing themselves to meaningfully responding to the assembly recommendations. For us, that's a really important signifier to our assembly members that their deliberation is going to be listened to and valued. You know, these people, again, 36 hours across six sessions in the month of March. That's a lot of time that people could be spending with their family, reading a book, doing, you know, many other things.
Listening to public radio.
Yeah, listening to Democracy Optimist. And they're giving that time freely. We want to make sure that that time is honored, even beyond the compensation, even beyond all the other barriers. Like, we want to make sure that they feel like what they have done is respected and listened to by our legislative body. So that is what we asked the council to commit to, and they've committed to it. If, you know, we've also asked them to commit to not changing the recommendations. So we want the recommendations, if they come forward, to be put on the ballot as is. Mm-hmm. So any change to the city charter has to be adopted by ballot measure. The last time that happened, or that this was even attempted, was in 1998. And the sole ballot amendment that came out of an externally led charter review commission got pretty walloped at the ballot box. You know, we'll see what happens. But I think ultimately, the power to make decisions about what goes on the ballot is in the hands of our assembly members. And then the decision about what happens on the ballot is in the hands of the public.
So let's zoom out real quick to ask what the national landscape looks like. I mean, are people nationally paying attention to what's happening in Lexington and the Civic Assembly?
Absolutely. Yeah. So we, to say that we get a lot of incoming questions and communications from national organizations, national philanthropy groups, would be an understatement. There's a lot of, I think everyone in our country recognizes that we're having a lot of trouble making decisions, right? If you look at what's happening in our federal government, where, you know, Congress struggles to barely even adopt bipartisan legislation that everyone can, you know, for the most part agree on, we need to be looking at new ways of governing ourselves and making decisions that remove some of the political disincentives from it, right? That sort of insulate, insulate people from this like partisan rancor that we are experiencing right now. And so we're getting a lot of incoming communication because of that, because citizens' assemblies or civic assemblies are seen as one of those potential models. And there are a number of them happening across the country. But I think one of the things that's sort of special about ours is that it is a local organization that's doing it. It's not a national or international organization coming in and running a process in a community they may or may not know particularly well. You know, we have a stake in the future of this, because if this doesn't go well, people are going to get mad at CivicLex, and like, fair enough. So that means we really want to do it right. We really want to put all of our energy into making this the best possible version of itself that it can be. Is it going to be perfect? Absolutely not. But what we are hoping for is a meaningful glimpse that others can learn from at what it looks like for a community to decide its own future in a better way. And that's what we think the Civic Assembly could be.
If that's not optimism about local democracy, then I don't know what is. Richard Young is the executive director of CivicLex, which is running the first ever Lexington Civic Assembly this spring. Richard, thanks for joining Democracy Optimist.
Thanks so much for having me.
Josh, I think it's important to emphasize how important this Civic Assembly is. You mentioned that it's being watched all over the country as a potential model for how to truly involve people in government. Do you think that this very transparent, very grassroots exercise might even restore some faith in democracy, maybe remind people what's at stake?
Yeah, I'm so excited for this initiative. I jumped at the chance to serve on the advisory board when Richard came to me with the idea, because this is really everything that we're all about here in this series of Democracy Optimist, in my scholarship. It's the power of people, right? You know, democracy is not about those people in Washington, D.C., or even in Frankfurt. It's about all of us. And it's about the way that we can engage with each other in trying to find a better way to organize our society. So I think it's just really a great exercise to get people from all walks of life, from all different demographics, from all over Lexington, in a room together to talk about issues that really impact the way local government works. I do think it should be a model for, you know, civil discourse, for how we can talk to each other, but also about how we sustain democracy at the local level. You know, I've said all the time that democracy is not a spectator sport. And here we have people gathering, actually involved, and they're not, you know, people who are in power or who have, you know, a ton of moneyed interest behind them. They're everyday people. And they're the ones who are getting to make these decisions.
And, you know, I think it's really important here to repeat something that we heard Richard say, and that is that this action, the Civic Assembly, has city council buy-in. In other words, it's not just people just talking. There could be some action that comes out of it.
Absolutely. The goal here is, if the Civic Assembly decides there should be some changes to the city charter, to put those before the city council. And then the city council has already said that they're at least committed to putting that on the ballot. So hopefully they would follow through with that. And the voters of Lexington will get to decide whether to approve or not approve of these changes to the charter. So, you know, yes, it's not just people getting in a room and talking about important issues. They actually have power here. They actually have agency to make a change to how local democracy works.
And so this adds a new layer to local democracy.
Absolutely. It's, you know, it's a combination of just the people through a referendum deciding something, but doing so through the structure we already have in city council and a structured way to have these conversations. You know, you and I could just go to the coffee shop and talk about a change we want in government, but how do we actually put that into implementation? Now CivicLex, through the Civic Assembly, has created a structure to make that happen. And we don't know what's going to come out of the Civic Assembly.
Right.
That's really the other exciting thing. You know, they might decide that they want to, you know, have charter revisions, you know, every however many years, or once every 10 years, or we just have no idea. They might say that city council pay should go up, it should stay the same. But this is the sort of thing that the people themselves are going to get to decide, first through the assembly, and then ultimately in November through the electorate.
This is going to be really interesting to follow.
It sure is. And the public can also watch everything. I mean, everything is transparent and open, so people can go and watch the meetings. And I plan to be there for at least some of this to see the kinds of deliberations that are happening.
Thanks for joining us for this series of conversations about how elections work, about the value of your vote, and about challenges to your right and freedom to make choices at your local polling place. Find our series online at democracyoptimist.com. Joshua Douglas, writer and host, Mike Savage, executive producer. I'm Tom Martin, your series producer. Neil Kesterson, technical director and sound designer. Democracy Optimist theme song, American, by Madeline Peru. Mason Graber and Stephen Dabney, research assistants. Caitlin Douglas, graphic designer. Ella Fitzgeraldine, studio dog. Democracy Optimist is a special Eastern Standard series produced by Dynamics Productions for Richmond, Kentucky-based public radio station WEKU.
Don't you tell me no more lies, as if the slate is clean. I'm gonna read in my books, I'm gonna wrap them up tight. I can educate myself on the fight.